speed on the way down here, did you? You didn't speed again on the way down here, did you?
The Committee on Finance will please come to order. For the record, it's Friday, August 24th, 2012. And we are starting our day with an informational hearing on the bill that has been submitted. And we'll get a formal number when we go into session today as Senate File 1. Senator Gimsey is the author of the bill. And we are going to have just a brief overview from him, and then we will walk through with staff the numbers and the policy changes or the policy directives in the bill. So welcome, Senator Gimsey, and thank you for everyone who is here. If any other senators are here and want to pull up a chair to the table so that they can ask questions, please feel free to do that because this is an informational hearing. Welcome, Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Chair Roebling, and members of the Finance Committee. It's a privilege to be here with you today, and it's a good day to culminate a lot of work on the part of Senator Reinert, Senator Lori, and as well as many others in the Senate and in the House, and also our staff. And this really is a culmination of a lot of work that has proceeded quite quickly. And in terms of how government typically works, the first storm was June 14th, and here we are 2 months later, and we are ready to talk about how we're going to help the folks of the devastated areas, and it has gone very well. In my tour of the northeast portion after the flooding in Duluth, I can't say enough about how the communities came together, the local units of government, the counties, the emergency response folks came together for the immediate relief and the immediate needs of the people of that area. But today what we'll be working on is the more long-term effects and the restoration into the future for the folks in not just the northwest but the southeast portion of our state and also the wind-damaged areas up in the north part and northwest. So this bill is $167 million in total, and we will have staff go through it. Mr. Nauman, I believe, is here, and Mr. Bodern, if they would join us, will go through. Oh, Mr. Bodern, there you guys are.
members, in your packet is the spreadsheet, and also Senator Gimsey was talking about the affected areas. We have this map that shows which parts of the state were in the disaster areas. There's really several different sections that we are talking about here besides the flood up in northeast Minnesota. And so keep that in mind as we move along here. When you look at this, it really is a large geographic section of our state. So I think that we will start with the spreadsheet, and we'll ask Mr. Nauman to go through that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. Welcome back. Thank you. for the record, my name is Eric Nauman. I'm the fiscal staff with Senate Council Research and Fiscal Analysis. I'd like to walk you through the budget tracking sheet, which is this legal-sized document labeled Northeast Minnesota Flood and Summer Windstorm Relief in the upper left-hand corner. It's a document that was used as part of the negotiations with the governor's office. I'll walk you first across the columns, first your usual set of line numbers, then a bill reference column. So if you want to track between the spreadsheet and the actual language of the bill, we've given you section numbers and subdivisions. Then the line items, and in this particular case, because there's a collection of agencies that are affected, we show subtotals for all the various agencies and line items for the various proposals. Then the bill before you appropriates money in some cases from the general fund, in some cases they're general obligation bonds, in some cases they're the trunk highway fund, et cetera. So we make reference to those in the next column. If there's questions about the nomenclature, it's listed down at the bottom. Then the governor's recommendation for fiscal year 2013, and those are the first set of numbers that you see, and then a biennial total for 14 and 15. In some cases, it's mostly debt service. We have a tail. The agreement, the numbers that are in the bill, is the column that I'd like you to focus on in most cases. That's agreement 2013. We have a calculation that shows differences relative to the agreement from the governor's original position, and then finally a tail for the agreement. So working down the line items number, the first grouping of data is the public safety numbers. The first line item is a local FEMA match number. And I'll quickly mention to members, if there's detailed questions about some of these, I'm going to defer to Chris Idy. She's with public safety and is more familiar with the background on these. But I'll work you through the fiscal numbers initially. Then line five is a general obligation number of 2.285. This is primarily DNR money that's carried in the public safety department. And if you mentally think about that number and line 38 together, because this particular line item, the state must front the money for the federal reimbursement. And under public safety, these appropriations are largely a 25-75 split, the federal government providing the 75%. But for on this particular line item, we appropriate the federal side first, and then again, we'll get line 38 largely 100% reimbursed. But the 25% is the state contribution. Then the next difference that I'll highlight for you is the line 13, which is under the Department of Transportation. The final recommendation was $3 million lower than the governor, $35 million. This is state trunk highways and bridges. I'll mention for members that lines 11, 12, and 13 under the federal highway reimbursement disaster, there's an 80% reimbursement. Again, in this particular case, we are forwarding the money, and 80% of that will come back to the state. At least that's our best estimate. I should have mentioned at the very beginning that most of these numbers are still moving. They're estimated. They're our best guess at this point. And if there are detailed questions about that process, we can get into that. Under the Department of Employment and Economic Development, the MIF, Minnesota Investment Fund, was appropriated in the bill at $15 million. That's $5 million lower than the original estimate. Under the PFA, there was a recommendation initially for $823,000 of debt service for three cities. That recommendation was not carried forth in the final recommendation. Then skipping down, there's appropriations, mostly housing money for individuals that have had been affected by the floods in their homes, some capacity building grants and homeless prevention. Small appropriations for those. Those were carried forward. The Historical Society receives $250,000. Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, Senator Magnus.
I'm sorry to go back here a little bit, but on the transportation funds, Mr. Nauman said indicated 80% of that would come back in the future from feds. Is that just the state trunk highway bridges and highways and bridges, or is it local roads too? The 35 or 35?
Madam Chair and Senator Magnus, that's a great question. I may have skipped over that a little quickly. I would think about the reimbursement on the 3, the 11, and the 35, the 80-20. And
what you talking
about that, I trust
48. So 48 then.
I'm showing roughly, yes, not quite that high. In total, and I'll show you the other line item, it's about 46.
Okay.
Madam Chair. Senator Olson.
While you're back there, thank you, Senator Magnus. You made a comment, Mr. Nauman, about we'll come back to it. There's something about a moving target, or these figures are moving. My mind got stuck there, and so I'm not tracking with you since
sure.
then to figure out what that means. These aren't the final figures then, or would you clarify what that means?
Sure. Madam Chair and Senator Olson, it's a great question. There's always a tension when you do a disaster bill between getting the dollars out there quickly to ensure that the affected individuals and organizations and public entities that are affected by the flood, you get the dollars out there quickly to ameliorate the problem. and having good firm numbers, because you have to have engineering estimates, you have to have a whole series of calculations that go on to determine what the actual effect is. The legislature has a desire, evidenced by your special session, to move along fairly quickly, and so there's that tension that we're working through. These are the best numbers that we have at this point that represent what we think the appropriations should be to affect the problem that we're trying to fix. But admittedly, these numbers are estimates at this point.
So, Madam Chair,
Senator Olson,
Mr. Nauman, that's not to say that we aren't going to act on these as they are, but that at some point there may be cleanup, maybe by next session, that there may be some additional adjustments that would be appropriate, and that would be something would be left to the next legislature. Is that
Madam
what,
Chair,
what you're
Senator
kind of
Olson,
inferring?
I think that's a fair way to think about it. There's also some general transfer authority under the natural disaster chapter 12A that allows the agencies to do some of that, but to the extent that there's a need for legislative adjustments, that could certainly be done with.
But there is some transfer authority as well.
I think that, you know, the precedent has been that there is often some cleanup in a subsequent session. That's not unusual. At this point, though, we're saying this is our intent that you try and work within these numbers. We're not assuming that there's going to be more funding, but you know, not saying that there never could be, because in the past, if something comes up as they're working on a project, they may have to come back in and plead their case with us. And so I don't think we've said this. It's not the end of their efforts to try and get the projects all done the way they would have to be done if they can convince us of that. Senator Reiner, did you have a comment?
Thank you, Chair Roebling. And I would just support your statement. You know, folks locally have been working feverishly in repair. It's remarkable the amount of work that's been done just 2 months after this event. But, you know, you're right. It's not finite. It's not complete. All the T's aren't crossed and the I's dotted. So I do think that our local units understand that this is the vast majority of what the state will be able to do to assist. But I would certainly envision some, I think, tidying up in the next session, by which point, you know, we'll be 6 months out and really have the full picture of what was done and what it cost to put it, especially the public side of the house, back in order.
And there's always the flip side of that, that there may not be as much need as we're anticipating. And in the language, we do have that any excess funds will be returned to the general fund. And if it's a bonding project, they just don't have to bond. They don't have to, you know, let the bond for as much if it doesn't cost as much as has been estimated here. So we're hoping it can go that way instead of the other, but we're, you know, these are the numbers we're working with now from the agencies. Senator Nauman, did you have a question?
I did not, Madam Chair.
All right.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As long as we're asking questions in this first part of the bill, I did want to ask about the on line 19, and Mr. Nauman pointed out the $15 million for the Minnesota Investment Fund, and I just was looking at the language in the bill itself. What is that going to be used for? What are those dollars for?
So, Madam Chair and members, if I get this wrong, I trust that Senator and Mr. Bodden will correct me. It's assistance to businesses, cooperatives, utilities, nonprofit organizations based on the permanent statute. And it's assistance to these eligible organizations that were directly affected by the disaster. I can tell you that the department has done a survey, which is new for this disaster. They haven't done surveys in the past, is my understanding. They have a pretty good, I won't say a strong understanding of the total need out there, but they think that this number is pretty close to what's needed.
Madam Chair and Mr. Nauman, is this then for construction, rebuilding of facilities, or is this a thing to replace lost revenue because I'm just not clear on what the money is going to be used to do.
Senator Hand, we actually did put in the bill language that indicates that it can't be used for lost revenues. It's actually for construction, basically, repair. Is someone from Deed here? We did try and take some recommendations from the Legislative Auditor's Report, too, that relates to this, and they did use similar parameters in the last disaster, and this time we're actually putting them in the bill so that it's much clearer what this can and cannot be used for. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Loftus. I'm with Deed. To the question of how the money can be used, it is for repair, reconstruction, new equipment, replacement of lost inventory, but it's focused on physical assets, not loss of business.
On page 13 is where we see what the requirements for assistance for this section are, and it also says what is an ineligible activity, and it is clear that it is not include economic injury losses, relocation, management fees, financing costs, franchise fees, debt consolidation, moving costs, refinancing debt existing prior to the date of the disaster, and operating costs, as well as some other ineligible activities that are right above that. And so it basically is for structural damage.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bonoff.
Madam Chair, given that the legislative audit did recommend that we put those kind of changes in statute, are the things that are within this that do spell out these requirements just for this particular event, or because it's part of this, will they be ongoing?
I'll let Mr. Bodden answer that.
Madam Chair and Senator Bonoff, all the changes you see on page 13 are codified, so they'll be permanent.
Good. Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Lurie, did you have a question?
Well, I was also going to say on page 5 where the $15 million is allocated, it also references statutes 12A.07, and we have those in our packets, and it's actually a pretty good guideline as well, just for members and the audience to go read. It's pretty brief, and it kind of also really helps outline what the intent and purpose of this is, and so that reference is a good one and pretty easy to track down and could be helpful.
It's this piece, members, and it's on page 3. Okay. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now I do have a question, sort of a follow-up to what Senator Hand was talking about. On this Section 7, the housing finance, if I read that correctly, we are dealing, or let me rephrase it, are we dealing with only grants when it comes to the housing finance agency of this $12 million as opposed to loans?
Someone from housing finance here.
Yeah, they're unforgivable.
Senator Reiner.
Well, clearly not from Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. But as we've worked through this, and if somebody from MHFA is here and wants to correct me, my understanding is that money is going to the Quick Start loan program. Now, they're forgivable loans over a 10-year period. So if you remain in your home for 10 years, they're prorated each year that you remain in your home in terms of what you would pay back. So if you stay a full 10 years, it becomes a grant instead of a low-interest loan. And it's only for home infrastructure, water heaters, furnaces, electrical panels, no personal property, no carpeting, paneling, things of that nature. My understanding.
And then, if
Senator
I may,
Newman?
If we could back up then to Section 5, the employment, or I'm sorry, Minnesota Investment Fund, same question. That looks to me like it's grants rather than loans. Am I correct on that? And if there are no loans involved in the Minnesota Investment Fund, why are we going with grants rather than loans?
I'll let you answer that because I think I know the answer, but
Madam Chair, Senator Newman, the money goes out from Deed as a grant to the city or the county in those cases. The local unit of government then awards those as loans to the business. So in terms of the state funds, it's a grant to the city, but they channel it as a loan. And as it's structured, as our recommendation has been in the past and as will be this time, that it be a half of it forgiven if they meet, if they stay in business after 5 years. But definitely, it is it, for the business purpose, it is a loan.
And we do have some new language in here that in the past, the local unit of government that handled the grant loan process was able to recapture the loan money and keep it for their own economic development in the future. We are going to use that repayment money for, to seed a disaster relief account for the state, which is something the legislative auditor also has recommended. And it would just be the start of that. I think in this case, it could be about, it could be half of the amount, maybe $7 or $8 million. But that's how we propose to use it in this bill. Senator Perry.
Thank you. Madam Chair, is there, when the cities loan this out, is there a set interest rate on that?
Mr. Loftus.
Madam Chair, Senator Perry, in the past, and as I believe we'll do this year, we provide recommended loan guidelines to the local governments, and our past practice has been to suggest that it be at a 0% loan. So, in effect, what they're paying is only principal payments only for the duration of the loan.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the past, has that been adhered to, that recommendation?
Mr. Loftus.
Madam Chair, Senator Perry, I'm fairly certain in 2010 it was. In 2007, we had less strict guidelines that we provided to the communities, and our experience in 10 was based on trying to improve the situation from 2007. So I believe in 2010 it was 0%, 2007 before I can't speak to.
Thank you.
I think we'll proceed with the spreadsheet, and then Mr. Bodern can walk through some of the policy issues in here, which will answer a lot of the questions that are being raised right now. Senator Perry?
I just one more before we go through. I just had a question, if somebody can answer this. When I take a look at line 3.24 and I take a look at and compare it with line 8.15, it appears that there's two different funding sources for debris removal. And is this duplication, or can somebody explain the difference between the two appropriations, the one of $500,000 and the other for $2
million,
and what the difference that the money is used for?
Mr. Nauman can explain it.
Madam Chair and Senator Perry, I trust that the agency will correct me if I get this wrong, but the first one that you've identified is general debris removal funded through the Department of Public Safety. And the second one that you cited is in the DNR. So you're talking about public waters, debris removal, and sediment that occurred as a result of the large water amount that was flowing through public right-of-way.
Senator Perry?
And the reason I bring this up, Madam Chair, is because we all well know that I went through the 2010 flood down in my Senate district, and I had an issue with the dollars and who was in control of the dollars and how the dollars were expended and to get the debris removed from the waterways. And I was very concerned about the lack of effort, it appeared at the time, between the, specifically Steele County and the DNR, and whose responsibility it was to remove the debris, how quickly would it be removed, and who was going to pay the cost. And so when I see that amount of money, I'm sitting here wondering, has that been discussed between the DNR and the local counties on that debris removal? Because I know it took a long, long time to get any removal of debris through the waterway there. And
now, I do think that they are working on coordination. And Ms. Eddy, do you want to address that issue?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Chris Eide. I'm the Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and we coordinate the response and recovery to disaster. Madam Chair and Senator Perry, there is, because of the vast amount of debris from this in our streams, streams, waterways, and private property, there's been a subcommittee that has been developed for debris removal, which includes the local units of government, Board of Water and Soil, Homeland Security Emergency Management, the DNR, Army Corps of Engineers, FEMA,
and the USDA. So we are all ensuring that we can have a plan for the debris removal, which includes the vast amount of sediment and boulders and rocks that have been deposited in the waterways and on people's private property that actually originally belonged in the waterways, so that we can do it in a coordinated and timely manner.
Senator Perry.
Thank you. And Ms. Addy, you and I worked together a while on that last one, but that's a huge concern for me, because nobody seemed to want to make the decision to get it done, and when we have our emergency management director sitting down there saying we need to move this debris and we need to move it now, who's, you know, it was said that, well, if you move it, you pay for it. And those are the issues that I think have to be so closely looked at moving forward, because, like I said, we were concerned about that debris staying there through the next season and creating more flooding in areas. And I'm hoping that from 2010 that has been carried over to this year.
Madam Chair and Senator Perry, we get better every time we do this. And the debris was so overwhelming in this one, in that it's not the regular woody debris. And that's also the reason why in 2010 we didn't need our section for the individual debris removal for homeowners. But in this one we will, because it is different types of debris.
Senator Reinert.
And Senator Perry, I think that this process worked pretty well, and if it came through learnings from your experience, I thank you and your folks that went through that, because we did have that issue for about 24 hours, and then it was just let's get the job done. And especially for the folks in the Fond du Lac neighborhood right down by the St. Louis River, who had, as Ms. Seide said, parts of houses and decks and propane tanks and fuel tanks, and, I mean, anything that could have been washed down river had been washed down river. There was about a 24-hour, we don't, you know, whose job is it? Whose budget should it come from? And then it just got done, and it had to, because we had potentially more rain coming, and if those streams hadn't been cleared, we would have had a significant additional event. So when we went out to visit the next time, the neighbors said, thank you. People are just, they're making it happen. And that was really, you know, we oftentimes hear that's not the case. There's a line that someone won't cross, and we really didn't see a lot of that in this situation.
Hey, Mr. Nauman, would you continue, please?
So, Madam Chair and members, I think we left off with Bowser. There's a $500,000 reduction to the original request for RIM. The erosion, sediment, and water quality is slightly lower, $4 million lower than the governor's original rec. Then there's an appropriation to the Department of Ag of $600,000. The Department of Education receives $761,000 in the one case for people protection, and the other case for some facilities grants for school district buildings that were damaged. The Department of Health receives $565,000. The original recommendation was for $100,000. From the PCA, it turns out we don't actually need to appropriate that money, so this is a technical change. It looks like a reduction, but it's not. Then similarly with the Department of Management and Budget, there's some bond sale expenses, and we're showing a $30,000 upper and a $30,000 downer. Just that's the appropriate way to carry those funds. There is a tail for city tax-based replacement aid for tax-based losses. That doesn't occur until fiscal 15, so it's shown in the tail, and there's no change to that. Madam Chair, members, highlight the transfers, reductions, and cancellations line. It's been described that this bill carries a $167.5 million cost. In some respects, or in all respects, that number is possible because of a series of transfers, reductions, and cancellations. The first page, roughly, is reductions from previous disaster bills that are from the general fund. And then there's a series from MnDOT that are also disaster-related, but they come from, in most cases, the Trunk Highway Fund. So that gets you down to 12.6 million of reductions associated with the bill.
Which proves the point, members, that sometimes we do get money back when they don't expend it all. That's what we're seeing here.
So then, Madam Chair, lines 94 through 102 show by fund subtotal for Article 1. Then Article 2 switches into the windstorm disaster relief. Public safety receives an appropriation of 5.8 from the general fund. Then there's some DNR appropriations for reforestation and lost revenue and salvage timber sales. Then you have a subtotal for by article. And then the total bill summary begins on line 126. You'll notice on line 136 is the $167.5 million of total appropriation in the bill. And then, members, we see a summary by agency. Then finally, to wrap up this portion of the discussion, I'd like to highlight the general fund summary. There was $26.4 million that was left on the bottom line at the end of session. Those dollars are used in this bill, and a cancellation from the budget reserve of $45.3 million, a little bit lower than the governor's original rec, pays for the general fund spending of $71.8 million. You'll see the expenditures in the general fund are the same amount, so you net out to zero. So rather than having the 26.4 on the bottom line that we had at the end of session, we will be back at zero until we have another forecast.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to go back, and Mr. Nauman, I assume you can help us. I wanted to return to the first part of the bill, the flood relief in the education portion, the disaster enrollment impact aid. Could you walk us through the calculation, how that's determined and what that is used for?
Senator Hahn, I'd be ecstatic to help you with that one. This is the one I'm more familiar with. So when a disaster happens, Minnesota has a pretty rich history of providing school districts with a pupil protection, if you will, for lost pupils. And we don't mean pupils that passed, God forbid. What we mean are pupils that, because housing was disrupted or patterns of travel were disrupted, students have to enroll elsewhere. And because Minnesota's education finance system is a pupil-based system largely, we have a history of providing a dollar amount per lost pupil. And the longer history is that we would then phase that down over time. The new permanent statute gives it more just a single adjustment. And what we're doing in this bill is there's about 11 and change pupil units that the Moose Lake School District lost, multiplied times the basic formula allowance for fiscal 13, which is 5224, and then rounded up to $61,000. Okay.
And members, on lines 82, 85, and 86, we have done this in the past, and then if they didn't expend it, it is showing up as being available now for use in this disaster.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Nauman, where can we see on the spreadsheet what it would look like when the money comes in from the federal government with their match?
Madam Chair and Senator Bonner, you can't on the spreadsheet. What I can do is identify for you where we think those are going to occur. The simple reason we're not showing it on the spreadsheet is in the case of some of the transportation money, the process takes 4 to 6 years in some cases. That we believe the DNR money happens a little bit quicker, but it's hard to if we knew what the dollars were, we could book it, and that only happens when we know what the timing is. So what fiscal year would you slot it into? So it's a bit of a stab in the dark based on the timing of the way the federal government works. What I can do is highlight the items for you. So as we mentioned before, under the Department of Transportation, we're expecting 80% reimbursement on lines 11, 12, and 13. And then we're expecting 100% or thereabouts reimbursement from line 38. There may be some other small items that I'm not aware of, but we don't think that that those would be substantial. There's also, Madam Chair and Senator Bonoff, about $81.5 million that's not shown on the spreadsheet. And the simple simple reason for that is in that particular case, line 4 is the 25% reimbursement, and the $81 million is the 75% reimbursement. But we don't have to forward the money in that case, so it's not shown on the sheet.
Senator Bonner?
So, Madam Chair and Mr. Nauman, when that money comes in, it will be booked at that time, and then how will it reflect on the state's books? Will that be just some sort of, an increase in our fund balance that isn't projected? I mean, do we forecast this money? Where does it live in our accounting method?
Madam Chair and members, being a little new in this function for this bill only, I think I'll let the Department of Finance address that question. I think what we would do is show it as an increase in federal resources that offset against the state resources that we've appropriated here. But I think Margaret Kelly is here to answer that.
Welcome, Ms. Kelly.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Margaret Kelly, Budget Director at Minnesota Management and Budget, and Mr. Nauman is correct. We would show that as additional federal revenue coming into the state, and we would continue to show the appropriation, but at some point that appropriation would cancel.
Ms. Kelly, quite a bit of that would it be going to the Trunk Highway Fund or not? As some of this is coming out of our Trunk Highway Fund, so then it goes back into that?
Madam Chair, I believe that all of our federal revenue is booked in a federal funds account. And I'm not sure, perhaps Mr. Nauman can correct me, if we do put federal funds in the Trunk Highway Fund. I don't have the answer to that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gimsey.
Maybe we could have somebody from MnDOT come up to ensure that what I'm telling you is correct, but the dollars that are coming out of the Trunk Highway Fund to be appropriated up front for the repairs have to go back into the Trunk Highway Fund, whether it's Trunk Highway bonding or the actual dollars themselves. But I believe that those dollars have to stay within the Trunk Highway system, the Trunk Highway funds.
Ms. Hatch is nodding her head that is correct.
Madam Chair, I would agree that these funds then would be treated as a reimbursement of expense and would go back into that fund.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions about the spreadsheet? Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is the definition of a public infrastructure? I noticed as the pictures were making their way around the table, trails or historical monuments be public infrastructure? But I, most of the time, we up in the valley when we've had disasters, it's you know roads, bridges, sewers, kind of the obvious public infrastructure. But since we don't have a lot of trails up there, are trails actually considered public infrastructure according to FEMA?
Madam Chair, Senator Stump, yes, they are. There are 7 different categories of public infrastructure, one of which is some parks and trails and recreational facilities. Another one is public buildings, which would also include any historic, the eligible costs of any historic facility. There's a lot of WPA bridges, particularly in the zoo area. Those are all eligible FEMA projects. So it really is anything that's there for the public good. So parks and trails, school athletic equipment is actually even public infrastructure in this situation.
Madam Chair, if I could just follow up. It's been a year or two since we've had a disaster up in our area, so one of the problems.
Hope, Senator Stump, that all that flood mitigation
crossed.
Money is going to help, so we don't have any more.
One of the problems that occurred up in our area is, let's say, a sewer line had to be replaced or was damaged. It is repaired, FEMA monitors it very, very closely and will not write out the check until it's just the way they want it. and they only pay for the section of that sewer that has been damaged. So let's say that sewer is 90 years old on both sides but hasn't been washed out. And so they're paying basically for that section that got washed out, which seems a little crazy because it makes a whole lot more sense to kind of replace the whole line so you have a new line to serve. So what is that still kind of the standard or the norm for FEMA's approach, and what's the state's response to that?
Society.
Madam Chair and Senator Stump, you can actually give my testimony because that's exactly some of the examples I use. It is still the same way.
Okay.
And that is precisely the reason that you see things in the Public Facilities Authority area,
It's on line 24.
On line 24. So you see the $6 million. That's exactly the reason that Public Facilities Authority and some of Bowser money and DOT with their local road and bridge construction area is because if there's damage, FEMA will only pay for the damage. And obviously when you get in there and you don't repair a piece of a road here and a piece of a road here because they don't engineer that way anymore. So that's why the state is putting in the supplementary amounts in order to actually repair the entire public infrastructure.
I think Senator Stump, a good example would be, and this happened up there a lot, like there will be a blowout on one block,
right,
and then it'll be okay for a block, and then there'll be another blowout. And this money from Public Facilities Authority will help bring up to the current standard that whole storm sewer right there. So they had a 12-inch storm sewer. The standard now is 16 inches. So if FEMA only would repair the section that blew out at 16 inches, and then it's going back into a 12-inch and then back into a 16-inch, we're going to have more blowouts in the future. So the plan is that will all be a 16-inch.
And Madam Chair and committee members, the point I want to make is that whenever there's a disaster, nobody wins. The communities end up putting a huge amount of money and effort into it. The state puts a large effort into it, and the federal government puts an effort into it. And so many of these communities, it looks like they're getting rich off of one part of government or another, and in reality, they're going to end up with a lot of debt. And that's true with the disasters. So they're always a lose-lose situation, even though it looks like there's an awful lot of money being put out.
Thank you. Senator Perry.
Thank you very much. If I can switch gears here a little bit. Earlier, Ms. Heidi, we were going through a list, and you made the comment that none of the funds could be used to compensate for lost business or revenue. Is that correct?
In the in the Minnesota Investment Fund, it is only physical damage.
Okay. Well, then, Madam Chair, the one thing that I'm seeing here that is somewhat concerning, why then would we replace lost revenue for downed timber for the DNR? If we don't do it for the private sector, why would we do it for the government? I mean, that would be the question that I would have, and that's to the tune of about $1 million, I believe. If I look on line 113, I think it's $1,075,000. I mean, it doesn't seem like the right thing to be doing if we're not helping restore lost revenue for the businesses in a flood area.
I know. Could we have someone from the DNR come up who is familiar with this issue? We had quite a bit of discussion about this earlier.
Well, Madam Chair, Kent Lacus-Mo from DNR. That $1,075,000 is divided into two parts. It's $450,000 to administer the salvage sale, and there was $625,000 for lost revenue. What happens on the revenue side is the downed timber is worth much less than standing timber. A third to 50% of the value. And And the timber sales that we've already had of standing timber are going to wait several years before they harvest them, because now they're going to go after this down timber to salvage it while it's still valuable. So there is revenue that's, and that money that's on a timber sale, there's 15% that's a down payment, and the rest of it comes when the timber is actually harvested. So there is money that the state is foregoing, or it's not going to, you know, you aren't going to get the other revenue from the timber sale until it's actually harvested. So the money goes into the, on a timber sale, goes into the forest management investment account and is reappropriated to the department. So what forestry is seeing is a significant loss in revenue due to this blowdown. And this is compounded, and why you're seeing it now and you haven't seen it before is after the St. Croix blowdown in 2011, there was, I believe, 250,000 cords of wood lost, and that was probably a $5 million hit to the forest management investment account. So the account is struggling, and this provides some assistance. And for specific questions on forestry practices or benefits, Forrest Bowe, the director of forestry, is also here.
Senator Perry, we did have quite a bit of discussion about this as we were in negotiations, and we agree that the environment committees do need to take a look at the whole forestry program. You know, the wood sales are down, but if we don't provide them the funding that they use to fund their forestry program right now, they will probably drop even further, and it has an effect on our state's economy, because we certainly have some major industries here that are dependent upon the forestry, harvesting the timber here. And so it's, I think in the end, it's a temporary measure to keep this industry going, and the DNR people out there trying to find buyers for the timber. And if they didn't have this funding, they would have a lot less staff to do that, and it is at a time when there are some difficulties in that overall industry. Senator Newman. Oh, sorry, Senator Perry, if you want
Madam
to
Madam Chair, how do we justify that? How do I go back to steel and Rice County businesses when they see that we're bailing out our own state government because of loss of sales, and yet we had businesses that could hardly or couldn't even keep their door open? They lost sales. I mean, are we playing a double standard here? I mean, are we saying, yeah, we're going to bail out companies that are operated by the state of Minnesota, hence our forestry department, we're going to bail them out for loss of sales. But we're certainly not going to bail out the small entrepreneur, the small business person out there when they've had loss of sales. I mean, I don't know how you go back to our districts and explain that to somebody that's been affected through a disaster, a business person, that we can do it for our own government, but we can't do it for the small business person.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gimsey.
Well, there are other components to this that we should probably talk about and express here. There's a public safety component to this because of the downed trees. If we don't get in there and remove them, they become a fire hazard, as we saw up by the Boundary Waters canoe area when we had the big storm up there. And, you know, it creates a lot of potential hazards, not just for public property but for private property. This whole program operates off of the stumpage and the inflow of those dollars coming from what is really an asset of the state. And what we're trying to do is preserve that asset as much as anything.
Yes, all of this timber is on public lands, and so it is our fiduciary responsibility to manage it. And we've charged the DNR with that, and I guess the goal here is to make sure they have the resources to do it. Senator Nino?
Madam Chair, I wasn't planning to talk to this, but this particular piece has stuck out to me and causes me great concern. We're spending $500,000 to sell something. If it's a fire hazard, let them come in and take it for free. Why do we have to spend $500,000 to do it? And this money, as I understand it, is coming out of the general fund, which means next year's deficit will be larger. So this particular line concerns me. Now, Were this a real committee meeting, maybe I would have an amendment to change this, but we can't do this because this bill doesn't exist yet. It won't exist until 2 o'clock when it gets introduced. So this particular line causes me some concern, and I think we should have some additional discussion about that. We're spending $1 million, which is going to create a larger deficit next year because it's coming out of the general fund. We're spending $500,000 to sell stuff. And the remainder of that money goes into a dedicated fund that can't be spent without a legislative appropriation. Why is it in this bill? I think that's a significant question. If we're going to spend money to fix infrastructure, I get that. But if we're going to take money out of the general fund to put it into a dedicated fund where it can't be spent until we give an appropriation later, that raises some questions. And I think Senator Perry's on a good tack here as to why are we doing this? And I think this needs some more discussion. And Senator Newman, I don't know if you had a follow-up on that. Those are my comments. I'll just leave it at that.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to switch gears to two other lines that I'd like to ask a question about. We can certainly, if Senator Nino or Senator Perry want to come back to the issue regarding the DNR, I happen to agree with them. I really don't understand why we are in an emergency type situation appropriating money to the DNR. But my question is two lines, line 12 and line 59. If someone could explain to me on line 12, program, this is under transportation, program planning and delivery for $1 million, what is that? Is this money that is going to MnDOT for purposes of planning, or is this money that is actually going into building roads and fixing roads and bridges? I don't know who to ask the question of.
Ms. Hatch.
Madam Chair, while she's coming up, these dollars are going to go for engineering, permitting, and studying major, and when I say major, that's an understatement, issues that we have with Highway 210, Highway 23 that go alongside of a river and alongside of what is virtually a cliff above it, and going to go back in there and to repair or realign that road is going to take an extreme amount of not just study, but understanding what the environment is around that roadway so that we don't run into future problems like this. I can appreciate that the number looks high, but when you go up there and you look at the damage and what is ahead of MnDOT and their engineers and designers and the impacts, I think you would gain an appreciation that this number is probably appropriate. And, again, it's an estimate. It doesn't mean that it will all be spent, but it's their best guess at this time. Mr. Peterson is here and probably can explain it better than that or more detail.
Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As you can see, I'm not Ms. Hatch, but hopefully I will do as a substitute. I'm Scott Peterson with MnDOT, and Madam Chair and Senator Newman, we have our current estimate for damage to the trunk highway system that will need substantial permanent repair is about $55 million. We're asking for an appropriation of $35 million to help us pay for the cost of making those repairs in this bill. As Senator Gimsey correctly stated, there are several locations where there's some pretty severe damage that will need, some very detailed plans drawn up to make those road repairs, very similar to what we do for most of our construction projects across the state on a regular basis. And the reason the planning language is also included in there is that there are places in particular in Jay Cook State Park where there's been pretty severe damage where we're going to do kind of an extensive reassessment of what to do with Highway 210 in the park, whether it should stay where it currently is, or whether we should make significant modifications to the grade or perhaps even put it on new alignment to help prevent future flood damage.
Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And also, I guess, on this line, it is a big number for planning. I've been up and seen Highway 210, and thank you, Senator Gimsey, for coming up to view it as well. And it is striking when you get up there and actually see. And the need to plan does become obvious when you've fully seen it. But also, I'll say that this is one of the lines that Mr. Nauman stepped through and said that this will be eligible for the 80% federal match as well. So, I mean, 80% of this presumably will be coming back from the feds once the Federal Highway Administration emergency response monies are appropriated. So that does make it a little bit more palatable, but all of the governing entities kind of agree that a planning effort of this magnitude is warranted when such significant damage is seen. Trying to think through and make sure that we have the best repairs to meet the future needs of the region is a wise use of money. And I thank those of the legislature and the administration who came up and helped try to plan through how to best navigate this difficult world.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Gimsey, Senator Lurie, for that explanation. And I trust that the working group, because this is such a large number, I trust that it had been thoroughly discussed. It just seemed like a very large number, and I honestly didn't know what it was going to be used for. The other line, much smaller number, to me kind of a curious line, would be line 59, behavior health, just under $250,000. Can someone tell me what that is for, what the criteria would be for triggering the delivery of that money, and who gets the money?
Is someone here from the Department of Health, or Ms. Seide, do you want to try it? There is someone here.
I think it goes to the counties.
Welcome. Please identify yourself.
Hi. Dave Greenman with the Department of Health. This money was identified as being in need. Each of the counties in the immediate aftermath of the flood identified mental health needs in their community based on the intake at the disaster recovery centers. And basically what these are services that would be provided through FEMA if we'd gotten the individual assistance funding. What they consist of is what the counties have identified as what they think they need. There's at least one or two community forums being funded. There's some money for specific counseling, and there's also some money for specifically targeted to kids to address their needs.
Madam Chair,
Senator Newman,
is this money that has already been spent at the local level, and we are presuming to reimburse the locals for this then?
I'm not sure if this money has been spent yet. Excuse me, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if the money has been spent yet or not. I know we have provided some behavioral health services. I would assume this is part of that, though.
Is the counseling, Madam Chair, is the counseling for behavioral health or mental health issues ongoing then as a result of this disaster?
Maybe somebody else could actually.
Mr. Greenman.
Hello. My name is Nancy Carlson. I'm organizing the behavioral health response. The counties have begun some services on their own, but no, this is a short-term service within maybe like a year here. They would probably end at the anniversary time, and we would transition then people that were still experiencing some more of the traumatic stress reactions onto ongoing mental health services. But there's a real difference between disaster mental health services and ongoing mental health care. This is more services that help the individual and the communities build and recover and build more resilience and strengthen them from the trauma impacts that they've had. And our requests for services are based on SciStart triage data that we've directly concrete data that we correct that we collect it from our behavioral health, our volunteer behavioral health teams that is basing the response. We asked for a request from the counties for what they wanted, but we based it actually on concrete data that we collected on need.
Senator Hand, did you have a question?
Well, Madam Chair, yes. I was trying to, I think, ask the same question that Senator Newman is getting at. But is the money granted to the counties, or is it the county submit, here's what we had to do and here's the cost, and then the state pays it? In other words, is this a hard number? We're going to spend $565 million or $1,000, or we're just going to spend what it takes and by bills submitted by the county?
Ms. Carlson.
Yes, Madam Chair. This is not, I mean, it would be a grant, but it's not a hard number. There'll only be, the money will be paid out as the services are performed and the need for the services are that are there.
I know from one of our previous disasters, there was actually a grant given to Lutheran Social Services to manage this type of service. Mm-hmm. And when the farmers didn't come in and use it, it was returned. And so if it is not used, it would be returned. But it's their estimate of what they may need.
Thank you.
Senator Ingebertson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In light of the question of the two or three senators on the panel who don't sit on the Environmental Natural Resource Committee, Mr. Bow is here, as well as Deputy Commissioner Meyer, that can probably answer the questions with regards to the reforestation portion of the bill and the loss of salvaged timber sales. Maybe a little more clarification for them if they would come forward, if they have any questions.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, members, Forrest Bow, Director of the Division of Forestry with DNR.
Are there questions for Mr. Bow? The one thing I am still curious about, Senator Nenow indicated that it goes into the money from the forestry sales go into a separate account, which are later appropriated. What would be your expectation when you get this additional revenue to pursue timber sales of the type of revenue that would be brought in from that effort?
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you for the question. The wind damage events of July 2nd and 4th are pretty significant for our state forests, and those state forests are a state asset. What we're seeing as we're already able to put some of those sales together is we're garnering about one-third of the value of that state resource when we put up those timber sales. So first of all, there's not as much revenue coming back to the state into that forest management investment account. We in DNR utilize that in account as appropriated by the legislature for our operations. So those are a couple of critical items. A large amount of the bill or the request is for reforestation. And so as those trees are damaged, what we need to do is to get those stands back into production as soon as we can. Without appropriate funding, we're not able to get those stands replanted or reforested next spring. If we're not able to do that, have that funding available, then we would have to wait further, and those stands then become fire prone. They become prone to insect and disease, and once insect and disease would take over on that down timber, then that of course moves over into the good standing timber that's left. So a lot of hazards that we foresee in the future if we're not able to first of all clean up this these lands and then get those lands back into production.
Do you have any idea what's your the amount you make compared to the amount you expend? Now, if you say you're only going to get about 30-35% of your normal value from the downed trees, does it cost more than that to do the timber sales?
Madam Chair, in a word, yes, it does cost more than what we would garner back from the sale. However, it is the right thing to do. Again, for the fire hazards, the insect and disease hazards that could then spread onto those other lands. And it's really about getting these lands back into production. If we would turn and walk away, there would, you know, you'd have unproductive stands for a number of years. Without any work on these stands, you really would not have a productive crop of trees for 80 years. And so we want to turn that around much faster by getting this land cleaned up, getting it replanted so that we could get it back into production, which promotes forest industry, forest health, and recreation in the state.
Do you have any idea how many acres of damaged forestry land we have?
I do. We've done significant aerial reconnaissance and also some on-the-ground work. Our current estimates are about 3,800 acres are severely damaged. In other words, they need attention immediately. We've got another, I think the figure is about 9,000 acres that are less, what we'll call less than 25% damage. So we're not sure exactly what the prescription will be on those, but the idea is to get at the higher valued timber sooner. So we have a lot of pine that has been blown down. Pine, if you're not able to harvest that or get that back, takes on a blue rot within a number of a very few months, and so that timber then becomes less and less valuable as the days go on. And two things happen with this windstorm. First of all, you don't garner as much volume because of the shattering, the breaking off, and then certainly the value of the timber is lessened as well in the windstorm. It just takes much more to harvest it. We don't get the kinds of bids that we would from the loggers in a good stand of timber.
Are there other questions?
Madam Chair, and
Senator Gimsey?
I think another critical point to this is that the loggers that typically bid on the stumpage in these situations and with the state will be tied up harvesting the damaged trees and lumber at a time when they would potentially be working on more productive, wholesome areas where we would receive more money coming in from the stumpage of those trees. So it does have a lagging effect over a period of time until the loggers themselves can get back to the more productive stands and to a cash flow that is better for us and for the Forest Service here.
Thank you.
Real quickly, Mr. Nauman, maybe Mr. Nauman can help me with this particular section then. So the monies that are going to be expended here will be recovered, certain percentage recovered from the federal government as well, 70-80%.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, yes, the way I think about it is that line 38 should be 100% reimbursed.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Oh, he's talking about the forestry.
Oh, I apologize. Mr. Bonner and I were having a conversation. I am not aware that one has a reimbursement on it.
No.
Senator Perry.
And I don't care to belabor it. I could sit here and talk about, you know, the lost revenue from the businesses could cost a child's education, could cost a home, and all of that. We're missing the point here. Are we setting policy from here and straightforward that it is okay to refund the losses of the forestry department, but not the losses of Jim's Super Value in Owatonna, Minnesota? That is the question here, and I believe we're doing everything we can not to answer that question. Why we're doing it for a government-owned forestry, when even Senator Nienau said, "Why don't we spur the economy and let those people that burn wood up in the area come in and maybe pay you a stipend to go in there and help you clean it up, and let them have the break?" I mean, this is a bad part of government. What we're doing here right now today in this part of the bill. And we ought be doing that.
Madam Chair.
Senator,
they should come back.
Perry.
Just, Madam Chair, they should. If they need the money, they should come back to the next legislature and say, we need money to clean this up. Not put it in here and set that precedent that because of a disaster, they get the money and the private sector doesn't.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Perry, I don't want to really belabor this argument, but I will give a bit of defense to it. I think the way that you'd have to do that is totally privatize forestry. This is an enterprise that is a part of government, and essentially it's saying how can we reasonably handle a disaster within one of our enterprises. We're having to make some of the same kind of decisions that a business would have to do, but we are government, and so that's the way in which we do it.
Good point.
So if we have a responsibility there, and you know, some of these lands are school trust fund lands, you know, that is money for education. There's a major enterprise we're grappling with how to best manage and turn that kind of thing around in these policies, and I think that will be ongoing. But I don't see that it's ever going to be totally privatized. Obviously, the bids and the people who are harvesting are private enterprise that are affected by it, and I think that's what the case is being made. We're trying to manage the enterprise that we have a responsibility for, but this is the way we have to do it, is through our taxpayers' investment as well.
Madam Chair, just one, and then I'm done on the subject.
Senator okay? Perry.
Thank you, Madam Briefly. Chair. To that point, I agree with you, Senator Olson, but there is a huge, huge, monumental difference. See, government can go back and take the money from the citizens. I, as a private entrepreneur, who do I go back to get the money from to recoup my losses? That's the difference here. The government takes from the citizens, and that's exactly what they're doing. That's monumental difference, and it's something that the next legislature, I think, had better take a good, long, hard look at, because this is just not right.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, the private enterprise may have to borrow. You could kind of look at it in the same way, and it's why some of us do look at when we do take from the taxpayer. When things get better, we would just as soon give some of it back or let them keep more of their own. So those are the kind of decisions and philosophies that we deal with in a government enterprise that aren't all that different, but it's a little, the dynamic is a bit different. But I think it justifies why, you know, when they do make that investment to get us through, that at other times we look for how we can save them money, our taxpayers' money as well.
Madam Chair,
yeah.
Real quickly, and I certainly agree with Senator Perry's sentiment here, especially when when there's been other disasters that have come through our state, and Leroy alluded to Senator Stumpton alluded to earlier that were actually paid for by the federal government when the insurance and stuff wasn't covered. This, I understand, is not being paid for. So I understand that. I understand us going back to our constituents and saying you're paying for infrastructure, you're paying for government. Why aren't we getting something for the home that wasn't insured? And I understand we've got a mechanism in here for people to borrow money, for Jim's Safeway to borrow money. But in other floods, there has been times when they were actually covered. This one is not. Is that correct? Certain percentages not covered?
That's correct. There was a more of an individual declaration in some of the other disasters than there is in this one that we were denied that.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And that's the point here is that when we do go back to our constituents, that's what we have to explain to them, that the federal government didn't step up all the way as they have done in some. However, I do know that the southeast part of the state where Senator Perry represents did not have that. I think it was handled in a similar fashion to what we're doing right now. So those homes, again, weren't covered. So I guess that's fair. I understand that part, but there has been some in the past that were paid.
That's correct. Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, since we're kind of skipping around, can I go to a different subject?
We can. We were going to start walking through the policy provisions.
Okay, then I'll wait.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Vana.
Just a quick comment to Senator Perry's comment. Senator Perry, with regard to your business that you referred to as a private business, one would hope that you are adequately insured as a private business, which isn't really a possibility for our forests.
Yeah. And you know, even with this, I often think when you have tornadoes, for example, everybody should have wind coverage in their insurance policy. But I did hear a report that you can't get flood insurance unless you're in a floodplain, and 80% of the damage done in this particular disaster did not occur in a floodplain. So the people were not eligible for flood insurance, and that does make a big difference. Senator Nelson.
Madam Chair, flood insurance is available, whether you're in a flood zone or not. It's just a matter of the premium and what the risk is. So just to clarify that, but that wasn't my question. Before you leave the fiscal numbers, I just wanted to ask one question, and Mr. Nauman has answered a number of the questions I came into the room with, but I just want to make sure, as you were going through the walkthrough, I understood Mr. Nauman to say that there were four lines that we can look towards some FEMA reimbursement for. And I just wanted to make sure, were there any others? And could you kind of identify all the lines that we would look for FEMA reimbursement for? I just noted 11, 12, 13, and 38. Are there other lines that have potential FEMA reimbursement?
Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, I'll re-highlight them for you, and I trust that if I miss one, that Chris Idy will correct me on that. So the way I would think about first and foremost is line five is the 25% payment that is a state responsibility for the DNR expenses. These two lines work in concert on line 38. We expect line 38 to come 100% back. Line four is the state match for the $81.5 million of federal money that we're going to receive that's not included on the spreadsheet. I spoke about that in response to Senator Bonoff's question. So there isn't federal money built into that number, but that number is the state match that will generate federal reimbursement or federal money. Then the Transportation Federal Highway Administration money is a different formula. And I understand that to be an 80% reimbursement that we have to forward fund, and that is lines 11, 12, and 13. And those are the reimbursement, the lines that have a reimbursement effect in various ways that I'm aware of.
Thank you.
Mr. Bodden, can we have you move forward with the policy provisions?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members, refer to the document that has the revisor number 126259 in the upper right-hand corner. That is identical to what will be introduced as Senate file number one when the Senate convenes. Beginning on page two of that document, and I'll move very quickly through the rider language. Obviously, we've talked a lot about the dollar amounts and the purposes. Section two on page two is the header that will govern how these appropriations operate. And it is tied to all these appropriations must be related to relief from the storms and flooding that occurred on June 14, 2012 in the federally declared disaster area. Line 2.25 makes it clear that unless it's otherwise specified, appropriations are available for an extended period of time through June 30, 2015. Obviously, capital improvement appropriations run for a longer period of time. Looking at the rider language and considering everything that's been discussed so far, I'll take you fairly quickly all the way to page 5, the language under the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And I'll back up here just for a moment, too. Obviously, all of these appropriations, or almost all of them, are made with reference to Chapter 12A, as we've discussed in several instances. That chapter provides considerably more detail than you see in the riders. So it's important to keep that in mind. And I should have also pointed out earlier that the header language for all of the appropriations makes it clear that under 12A.03 subdivision 5, funds appropriated to the agencies can be transferred from agency to agency for the same purposes, relief from the same flood. So looking at the deed language on page 5, the two things I wanted to draw your attention to there are on line 5.15. There is a reference that to section 12A.07, and we'll look at language later in the bill that is new, and we've already, Senator Hand had some questions about it, but that's some new language that would change how Chapter 12A operates. And then on beginning on line 5.17, there's a new reporting requirement Of particular interest there might be on 5.24 to 5.26. The criteria and requirements are going to be used by local units of government for the grant or loan programs they administer has to be reported to the relevant legislative chairs before the grants can be made. So that would include things like the interest rates the locals intend to impose. Then looking ahead to just moving quickly through this, taking into account what we've already talked about, and I will again highlight only items that really are new or different from what has been made in previous flood relief efforts.
Mr. Bodern, I'd like to point out that we did shorten the time period for the business loans to 18 months. I don't know that it had that it says that they must be executed by December 31st, 2013, and the deed commissioner was in full agreement, in fact, suggested that because he said oftentimes when requests come in much later, they're of more dubious nature than the ones that come in, you know, immediately and have very strong need, and so that has been shortened up.
Madam Chair, thank you for pointing that out. Then going ahead to page 9, the item I will highlight there is beginning on line 9.18. There's some new authority provided to the Board of Water and Soil Resources that allows the development of alternative standards and procedures for wetland replacement, as I understand, requirements, as I understand it. And as it is written, it is tied to projects that are funded for the board. And there's been some discussion about that. Then moving ahead to, I think I'll take you all the way to the very end of the rider language. I want to make sure we get to, well, I'll go ahead to page 12 and call your attention to the new language there that relates to that begins on there's some conforming cross references in section 17. And section 18 is the language that captures repayments of loans to local units of government and places them in a new disaster contingency account that is created in 116J, section 8, or subdivision 8, excuse me, that you see in section 20, beginning on line 12.24. And essentially, that creates a new account in the Special Revenue Fund for future disaster relief, and it'll be subject to those same terms and conditions for the Minnesota Investment Fund. Section 19 makes a similar amendment to Chapter 12A to capture repayments of loans from the Housing Finance Agency's Disaster Relief Contingency Fund. Then on page 13, there's language we have already looked at that relates to the eligibility requirements for the MIF funding, and I'll point out there that this does a number of things in addition to clarifying that it doesn't cover economic losses. The details of the loan application process are spelled out in considerable detail. As I understand, this is very similar to what the department used the last time. Beginning on line 13.30, you can see a list of 22 items that have to be included in the loan application. And line 14.30 on page 14 reinforces that recipients can receive these funds only after claiming all applicable private insurance and other sources of applicable assistance, basically disaster assistance. Then, beginning at the very bottom of page 14, there's a lot of existing language that has to be reprinted to show the change that is made on the very bottom of page 16, top of page 17, that simply extends an appropriation previously made for the Lake Superior Zoo until June 30th, 2015. But the rest of that language is existing law. And there's a similar change made on page 20. Then if you look at the bottom of page 21, there's some tax provisions that are referenced. This item in particular, section 24, is referenced on the spreadsheet, and I believe it has a cost of $80,000. This is, as I understand, almost word for word identical to the same tax provision that was used in the 2010 disaster relief bill. Essentially, it requires the county assessor to calculate what is called a flood net tax capacity loss. And if it exceeds 5% of the assessment year, then it requires a calculation that is made in Subdivision 2 for flood loss aid, which is basically the flood net tax capacity loss times the average local tax rate for 2012. One other little item in there on Subdivision 4 and 21.32 clarifies that aid received under this particular section can be used for repair of county roads. Then moving to page 22, again, Section 25 is a tax provision very similar to, if not identical, to what was done in 2010, and it waives property tax penalties for certain business and damaged properties, and it has reasonably tight language that relates to establishing that the property suffered damage of 50% or more as a result of the floods, and provides an extension for the second half of payable 2012 taxes until December 28, 2012. If the payment is made any later than that, then all penalties apply. And at the bottom of page 22, you'll see the agricultural homestead extension language. Again, similar if not identical to what has been done previously. This basically allows the owner of an agricultural homestead property to continue to claim that if the owner has abandoned the property as a result of damage caused by the floods. And on 23, the last tax provision, again, similar, if not identical to 2010, Section 27 beginning on line 23.9. And that just triggers reassessment of properties and notwithstands some requirements before the reassessment occurs. Then you'll see the language at the bottom of page 23. And this has been referred to in the spreadsheet. As I understand it, all of these reductions and cancellations relate to previous disaster relief. There may be one that does not, but they are all references to disaster relief funding in previous years. At the very top of page 25, there is the language that temporarily reduces the budget reserve account requirement for November 2012. To $612,236,000. That dovetails with Section 30, which reduces the current amount in the budget reserve account by $45,382,000. And what that means is money, if there's a surplus, as I understand it, in November 2012, that money would go toward the shift buyback. Article 2. Begins on page 25. What I'll point out there is it's not, as we've discussed, a federally declared disaster area, so there's no reference there. Beginning on line 25.24, there's a general reference to the counties that were affected by the disaster. We don't have a federal disaster declaration to tie this to. The same time limit for funding is applied on line 25.31. Funds are available through June 30th, 2015. These appropriations do not reference Chapter 12A, so you don't have that transfer authority that has been discussed. I think we've discussed the riders in some detail there, and I should point out that both of these articles are effective the day following final enactment. That takes us all the way through the bill.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair and Mr. Bowdern, just to clarify, what you were saying in relation to the reduction of the budget reserve is that any surplus would not have to backfill that before going to the shift. It will, in fact, go to the buyback of the shift.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, I think that's a better explanation than I provided.
Oh. No, <sorry.
laughs> That's correct. Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, let me follow up. And maybe Ms. Kelly could come up relative to this section. So, Madam Chair, Ms. Kelly, so relative to the language in terms of the November forecast, how is management budget going to count the reserve where there's the reduction for the forecast for November 12th, but not reflected for the February forecast.
Ms. Kelly.
Madam Chair, Senator Cohen, come November forecast, if there is a positive budgetary balance, that balance would be allocated to buy down the school shift. In the February forecast, if there is a positive budgetary balance, that balance would first be used to replenish the reserve up to the 653 amount, and then any remaining balance would use to buy down the shift.
So, Madam Chair, Ms. Kelly, so in effect, the provision in this bill is temporary, and come February, we go back to what has been the longstanding law. Is that correct?
Ms. Kelly? Madam Chair, that's correct.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Langseth.
Well, I don't have a question, but as most of you know, my part of the state and Senator Stump's part of the state has received a lot of money over the years on flood control, and it's been very much appreciated. This type of flood is very much like southeastern Minnesota, flash flood, very unpredictable. Ours is much more predictable, and if you come up there when it's at its absolute worst, the water is just barely flowing. It doesn't look dangerous at all. It's just that it's backing up all over the place. So we have spent quite a bit of money in my area, and most of it has already come back because of less damage in the 2009 flood. So we appreciated that very much, and I think it's time to help this area out.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For Mr. Bodern or Mr. Nauman, if I understand correctly, a presidential declaration, a disaster declaration, has been made for the items that are listed in Article 1, but not in Article 2. Am I correct on that? And that would be the reason why I'm not seeing any reference to Chapter 12A in Article 2.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
Mr. Nauman?
Madam Chair and Senator, that's correct.
Then if I may, Madam Chair, then given the fact that we don't have the references to 12A as the appropriations for Article 2 is concerned, can you explain to me the $5,800,000 that's referenced in Article 2 for state and local assistance? How is that money going to be doled out? Who is going to get it? What's it going to be used for? And what is the criteria to be used for spending that appropriation? Just some background information, if I could.
Ms. Seide, please.
Madam Chair, Senator Newman, this $5.8 million will be administered by my division, Homeland Security and Emergency Management. We will use the exact criteria that is used by the Federal Emergency Management Agency. We will the same categories will be eligible, which would be the debris removal, which is the vast majority of that $5.8 million, in addition to downed power lines and the costs of response to that event. The rest of the categories were fairly minimal, but mostly it was debris management, the electrical lines, and the cost of response. So we will be administering it through the same way that we administer the Federal Emergency Management Public Assistance Program. It will just not then go through their system. It will go through the state system.
Thank you.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a question because there was a comment out there. Did, in fact, because we're pulling money from the reserve, did, in fact, leadership ask whether or not any part of the school shift could be paid back through this bill?
We were mainly focusing on disaster relief. That was the agreement that was made. This is a way to potentially speed up repayment of the school shift by allowing us to take that general fund money that's being used in the disaster relief and not needing to refill the reserves to the 653 amount. We did check, of course, to make sure that that wasn't going to cause us any cash flow problems, that we'd have to actually go out and borrow money in order to survive that shortage. But we're okay. We won't have to. So drawing down that reserve account, and keep in mind, members, for 4 years, we had almost no budget reserve. When we were in our worst crisis, that reserve was next to nothing. So to drop it down $45 million is not a real big problem right now. But we did feel strongly that we didn't want to have to pay for this disaster relief ahead of paying back the schools. So we were trying to balance that somehow.
Madam Chair, and I'm just trying to clarify, because I know I'm going to be asked again, if in fact leadership made a request to the governor to put school shift dollars into the bill because we were using part of the reserves for the other part of the bill. And this question keeps coming back. I don't know where it started from, but so I just figured, being you were a major part of it, you could answer whether or not leadership did ask to put some of the school aid shift back into this bill.
Only through this mechanism. It will speed up the repayment. It won't hamper us from getting it paid back any quicker. But we were in agreement that this bill should focus on disaster relief.
Madam Chair.
Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, just to follow up on your comments, you're correct, certainly, in suggesting that the utilization of the $45 million of the full $653 in the context of the disaster relief makes some sense. And you're correct in suggesting that during the significant downturns we've had over the last several years, the budget reserve obviously was at zero. But there have been other consequences. We've had the state's bond rating reduced. Certainly there have been continual discussions with management and budget relative to the need for short-term borrowing for cash flow purposes. So the absence of the reserve has had other consequences. Again, under the circumstance, it's not unreasonable to look at how this bill is drafted. But in terms of the long-term fiscal stability of the state, to use the budget reserve as a piggy bank for a variety of purposes would not be a wise idea, given what the history has been over the last several years.
Well, and it's nice to have it there right now, and we do have a disaster. That's what reserve funds should be used for.
I agree, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, do we have any predictions as to, this may be just a kind of rhetorical discussion, if there aren't any excess or surplus in the November forecast, there won't be any further purchasing back of the shift. It all depends on whether the economy is changing. So do we have any predictions now that there might actually be some that will speed up that shift a bit?
Ms. Kelly is shaking her head no. But things have been turning around. We have been bringing in more revenue than anticipated, and I think our economy is picking up some steam. I don't know how much above what the projections were that is, but I know that we have been making gains, and we ended the fiscal year in much better shape than anticipated.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think it was $330 million. So it's very helpful. That will be reflected in the November forecast unless we have shortages in the months right now.
Okay.
So I think it will look good. But we do have some local officials here that we would like to have come and testify and talk a little bit about the impact on their local communities. And we're hoping to be done close to noon, so I think we're right on schedule. If we could have Mayor Don Ness, Commissioner Dahlberg, and Dennis Ganaru come forward. Are you Mayor Ness?
Yes. Madam Chair, Senators, first of all, I just want to thank you so much for your time and attention to this matter and to this disaster. It means a great deal to the residents of Duluth and our region, knowing that leaders across the state, regardless of party, regardless of the region that you represent, are stepping forward to help out our region and the residents and the taxpayers in our region. So we're just very grateful, especially to the leadership, both the majority leader and the speaker in the hours after the flood, and the governor all called and gave us their best wishes and gave us their assurances of the help that was to come. I can assure you that our region is hard at work. We're rebuilding. We have volunteers in our parks. We have volunteers going into the basements of our seniors to remove the flood damaged materials there. We are trying to raise private dollars to help address the need that we know will be unmet, especially in light of the fact that FEMA has decided against providing individual assistance. There have been problems to solve. There has been red tape to deal with. There have been some politics and the coordination of hundreds of projects, all critical infrastructure to residents of our area. While the damage has been significant, this was equally an emotional event for our residents. And Senator Reinert isn't here, but he can tell you that I have an emotional IQ near zero, which I blame on my Norwegian heritage. But even even then, I understand and have seen firsthand how much emotional toll this has taken on our residents. It has been overwhelming. It has been confusing. And the sense of uncertainty of how this will all play out and whether or not the help given to our residents will be there. This storm came so suddenly and to have so much damage. Going to bed on a Tuesday night to a hard rainstorm and waking up the next morning to see the city I love torn to pieces, sinkholes and streets flowing down the avenues. It was and has been devastating. Coming face to face with those residents who have lost so much, the heartache and the polarizing or paralyzing uncertainty that they have faced. As mayor, and I'm sure you share this sentiment, it's also frustrating. It's frustrating that we have this massive expenditure of public tax dollars in the state at a time when we don't have these dollars to spend and we're not using them for building or innovation or creating a higher quality of life for our residents. But these dollars are being used to simply fix the damage that was done in that devastating 24-hour period. And that's frustrating, but at the same time, it is desperately needed. And the residents of our region are very grateful for the leadership of folks that in this committee and in service of our community. And Senator Sumpf, I think, said it very well, that while there are a large number of dollars coming to our region, there is no question a net loss for Duluth and the surrounding communities. I want to share a very short story. There's a young woman who I didn't know prior to the flood. She lives in the Lincoln Park neighborhood, which is a very low-income neighborhood in Duluth. She bought her house 5-6 years ago, kind of at the height of the housing bubble. It's a very modest house, and she invested a great deal of sweat equity fixing up this home and making it nice and making it a place that her family could be proud of. A couple of years later, she lost her job, and she was upside down on her mortgage, and it would have been the easiest thing in the world for her to simply walk away. But she was determined to keep her house. And she took a job on the Iron Range and now is traveling an hour and a half north to go to work in order to keep this home. She lives on a block that is about a good 200 yards away from the nearest creek, the Miller Creek. But the volume and velocity of that water came down with such great force. It overwhelmed the culvert system and then overflowed the street and went down and pooled near her house. And so she lost her entire basement. She lost her furnace. She lost her hot water heater. And it did reach her electrical system. And so now her house is tremendously damaged. Of course, as many in Duluth, they don't have flood insurance. And when FEMA made its declaration or that they weren't going to provide individual assistance, she called my office in tears and saying, I'm not sure. I want so desperately to hold on to my house. I'm not sure how I'm going to be able to do that at this point. I'm not sure how I'm going to buy a furnace to heat this home and keep my children warm this winter. The bill that's before you gives her hope, and it gives her hope that she'll be able to stay in her home and reward the hard work that she's put in all these years to do so. So, again, I just, from the bottom of my heart, on behalf of my constituents and the residents of our area, we just thank you. You know, there's every one of us in this room would rather be doing something else. We'd rather be at our jobs. We'd rather be with our families. We'd rather be enjoying, you know, one of the few beautiful days of a Minnesota summer. But you're here to help the residents of our region, and we are just so thankful for that. Thank you.
Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mayor Ness, thank you very much. And aren't we lucky as Minnesotans that we have these resources to be able to provide them for you and your residents? And I just want to commend you because your reputation is known for providing the kind of leadership that really was needed at this time. And so we have heard about how you rallied people and all that you provided, as well as Senator Reinert and other leaders in your community. But great example for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Senator.
Thanks. Is Commissioner Chris Stahlberg here?
Good afternoon, and thanks for the opportunity to speak. I'm Commissioner Chris Stahlberg. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you all to the all the committee members here. Appreciate the opportunity. I also want to give my thanks to the entire state legislature. I appreciate that. I want to give special thanks to Senator Ginsey. Thank you on behalf of the transportation and also to MnDOT. I'm here representing the chair of the St. Louis County Board. And also I'm representing the entire St. Louis County Board. As a military man, I'll practice what we call bottom line up front. St. Louis County is in a world of hurt, and we need your help. Frankly, without the legislature's help here today, it would take us years to reach any type of a semblance for recovery. On a good day, St. Louis County is challenged. St. Louis County is actually the largest county east of the Mississippi River. And just for your orientation, everybody's probably in this room has made a drive at some time in their life up to Duluth. Well, the distance in my county and St. Louis County from Duluth in the southern part of the district to the most northerly part of St. Louis County is the same distance from Duluth down to the Twin Cities. And so it's a huge district. We have 3,000 miles of road, 1,600 gravel, 1,400 paved, 601 bridges. I'm, you know, on the human suffering that was mentioned by the mayor, it's immense. By the grace of God, there was not one person that was one loss of human life in here. We probably maybe got some media that I happen to serve on the Duluth Zoo. We lost some animals there. That was unfortunate. I had my daughter was in the educational class the week before, and the goat had eaten up her rain gear. And I had to tell her that that the goat was gone, and you know it's sad they're digging out. But on other ones that are digging out, the difficulty we have Fond du Lac, which has been mentioned, and that's the Fond du Lac neighborhood of Duluth, and not the tribe, and that's been very devastated. And they've had, as far as the sheriff's department, just the rescue squad trying to help them out. It was 3,300 hours man hours just to get out there, trying to get them back and forth to ferrying them. So it's a huge issue. I want to finish up and speak briefly just on the roads. I've mentioned that the difficult challenge. I'm very proud of St. Louis County and St. Louis County's Public Works Department. We have prepared for a rainy day. We never expected this type of rainy day, and we just could not be prepared for it. And that's why I'm here. And one of the unique challenges, my district represents the district that's the western half of the district, and there's also some unique challenges living on the side of the hill. And so for your orientation, my district starts almost when you start into Duluth, but for the western part of Duluth, from Wasabi out towards Fond du Lac, we have four entrances that go up the side of the hill that get us up to the top of the hill. Two of those are closed. Number two is closed right now, and it's probably not going to be open until 2013. And Haynes Road is probably not going to be open until 2014. So that leaves us with only two avenues to get up there. One of them that's been discussed, and MnDOT knows well about, and it's known through the work of the committee, is that Highland that we have has a traffic count. It had prior of 3,300 counts a day, and now it's up to 8,000 or 10,000. And so the problem that we have is that we're down to only two accesses to go up there, and these are the only accesses for the people in West Duluth to go. And I should also mention, though, that citizens of Wisconsin use this to travel up to the Miller Hill Mall area where they're spending, and we welcome them to spend lots of money in Minnesota to help us out. So it's important not only for the citizens of Duluth but also for the commerce of the region. And I thank you very much, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to speak here today.
Thank you, Commissioner. We also have Dennis Ganaru.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the Senate. My name is Dennis Ganaru. I'm the Carlton County Coordinator, and I have Greg Bernou, who's our Carlton County Land Commissioner, with me as well. I want to thank you for the time that you spent dealing with this issue to date. I also want to thank you for your willingness to listen and your response to what is a very important issue for not just us regionally in the area, but I think everybody in the state. I think most of you are familiar with the emergency response process. I think you know that well from what you've heard so far. I'll just point out that to date we've logged over 30,000 volunteer hours in Carlton County alone. And that's just the hours that have been logged. That does not count hours that people have just gone out and put in and haven't reported to anybody. We've also removed about 3,100 tons of debris. That's at a value of about $540,000. Our solid waste landfill handles about 3,800 tons of debris in an average year, so they've almost matched that with just flood debris in the course of the last couple of months. What you may also be aware of, and what I want to focus on, is the recovery. And I think that's what's so important with what you're talking about today and we'll be dealing with this afternoon. Basically, with recovery, we've been given advice in our county, Carlton County, and regionally from Homeland Security Emergency Management, FEMA, the incident management teams, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and any number of other entities. And we, because we have not dealt with this before, have taken every bit of advice we can get. And the advice that's been stressed to us from day one has been recovery, and I've got a disaster management for local government officials with me. I don't know who gave this to me. It doesn't say on it, but the second line says that the final goal that we have to have our eye on is recovery, and that's what we've been focused on. And when we talk about recovery, we're talking about recovery for individuals, businesses, infrastructure, cities, counties, the whole works, everybody involved, and not just in one county, but regionally. The models we looked at have been FEMA's, Iowa's, and Wadena and Otter Tail counties models, and the one that we've looked to probably the most is Wadena and Otter Tail County. We actually invited them down to talk to us about what they've done. They were very gracious in doing that. They've helped us out incredibly in that regard, and to date we've basically adopted their process of identifying a steering committee, putting together an unmet needs committee, volunteer committee, donations committee, and a spiritual and emotional health committee. It's basically all these committees are a collection of private citizens, members of religious organizations, and government representatives trying to work together to basically identify what the unmet needs are in the communities and meet those unmet needs beyond what the federal and the state governments can meet. That's the work that's being done. At this point in time, we've established an office in Moose Lake. There'll be one established in Duluth as well. We've identified the process for noting gaps in funding regionally. We've hired two case managers already and hope to hire up to 12. At this point in time, we're encouraging citizens to do what they can to apply for SBA loans so that that opens up doors for other things, and we need to continue to encourage them to do that as things go on. I understood and I heard clearly what Mayor Ness said about trusting this process, and I will give you a very short example if you humor me the time. I have a daughter that needs braces. It's going to cost me $6,000 to put those braces on her teeth to fix basically two front teeth that appear to be backwards a little bit and need to be pulled forward. That's all I see. When we went in and talked to the dentist about that, the orthodontist, they said she needs braces top and bottom. I don't quite understand why. And that orthodontist tells me it's an investment, and I have to trust what that orthodontist is telling me in this investment because it's going to impact her future, both from a health standpoint as well as a psychological standpoint. I don't know if I believe them or not. I've thought of all the questions I can ask. I've researched it like crazy, and I have basically vetted as many different options as I possibly can. At the end of the day, I just have to trust that orthodontist. It boils down to that. I'd like to leave you with the idea that you should understand and have the knowledge that your constituents are of a very hardy and resourceful stock. And I don't just mean in our area, but I mean throughout the entire state, because we've had volunteers from everywhere. And their willingness to step up, dig in, and embrace a recovery effort has been simply amazing, and it's going to continue to need to be that way. Passage of this bill is crucial, and it's crucial not just because it will repair the damage that's been caused, and in fact is not going to repair all the damage that's been caused, but it's crucial because it's going to support and complement the recovery efforts that are already underway and have been underway basically since the day after the rains and the winds stopped. And it will nurture the hope that we all have that a full recovery can be made. So I just ask that you, as I do with my orthodontist for my daughter, trust that we're going to do a good job with the monies that you do decide to give to us, and we'll make every effort to recover fully, not just for our local citizens and our communities and our region, but also for this entire state, a state that, having been a part of this today, I am very proud of. So, Madam Chairman, or Chairwoman, and members of the Senate, thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Genereau. If there's no other questions, I believe we will adjourn and we'll convene as a full legislative body at 2 o'clock. Senator Nino?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm assuming that this committee will reconvene and consider this bill so that we can take action on it. Is that correct? We'll be back this afternoon?
That is not the plan, Senator Nino. The plan is that if somebody wants to have a change at this point, that this bill is going to stand as it is, and another bill could be introduced. And if there's agreement by everyone who originally agreed to this bill that another one should be included, that will occur.
So, Madam Chair, I wasn't talking about changes. I was talking about this committee, the Finance Committee, taking action on a bill that spends upwards of $200 million. We are, as the chairman of this committee, you're telling me that you don't think that that's necessary?
That was the agreement, Senator Nino.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm not asking what the agreement was. I'm asking what your position is. Is your position that this committee does not need to act on a bill that spends nearly $200 million as chairman of finance?
I think we have vetted the bill, and if people have concerns, they have an alternative route to follow.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm going to make a motion then. I will move that we recess until 15 minutes after the Senate recesses so that this committee has the opportunity to come back and potentially consider this bill and take action on it, and I would request a roll call vote.
We're not acting as a full Senate Finance Committee right now because it's an informational hearing.
We're not in session either.
Right.
Well, Madam Chair,
you may be able
that's fine, and I know the result of what that vote would be, but as vice chairman of this committee, I have a responsibility to protect the oversight of this committee. Now, I don't know if anybody would offer any amendments. I don't know if anything, any word, any jot or tittle in this bill would change. But this is the Finance Committee, and we have the responsibility to act on a bill that's going to spend nearly $200 million. And if we don't, that's an abrogation of our responsibility, and I will not stand by and let that happen.
Well, Senator Nino, I think you could make that motion on the floor to send it back.
Madam Chair, you're the chairman. You can call this committee back anytime you want.
Okay, thank you. Well, if there's no other discussion, we're adjourned, and we'll see you on the floor at 2 o'clock.